Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on contracts when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And I guess that's because we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said to you, he said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's a law school professor. He said, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. It's worse than that, he said. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number's 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available in compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Contracts. Contracts. It reminds me of the Halliburton, you know, the famous no-bid contract that we hear about so often on the news. There was a time in America, if you had suggested that somebody was going to get a contract paid for with tax dollars, and it would be a no-bid contract, it would be like a virgin whore syndrome. It just simply would not have been tolerated or allowed. Today, I don't know this anybody complaining. I have never heard a single person ever complain about the famous Halliburton no-bid contracts in the Iraq War. It's very common. Many defense contractors today just get a contract awarded to them, and there's no competition, no bid. I don't know if you'd do that if you were remodeling your kitchen. Just call in a contractor and say, listen, this is a no-bid contract. I just want you to come in here and remodel my kitchen. Here are the specifications, or maybe I'll just tell you what to do a little at a time as we go along. Just punch in on the clock. You just charge me whatever you want to charge, and we'll just pay the bill. Price is no object. I've never done a contract like that. In fact, I'm an old-timey general contractor, and I never had a customer that called me in and said, price is no object, son. Just go to work and send me the bill. I was looking for a customer like that. I was looking for a fool that would do that, but I never did find one until we elected George Bush, and the American people have signed on for the no-bid contract. Now, contracts take many forms, and contracts are very pervasive in our society. In fact, contracts are all pervasive, but they are very little understood. For instance, when you went to grammar school, did anybody explain contracts to you, say, in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, somewhere along in there? How about high school? Did you have a class on contracts in high school? When you went to college, you know, assuming that you didn't go to law school. Now, if you went to law school, you might have heard something about contracts, but you know, even attorneys aren't very knowledgeable about contracts, especially contracts like credit card contracts. But did anybody ever teach you about contracts? Did mom and dad ever sit you down? You know, when they explained to you about the birds and the bees and sex and reproduction, did mom and dad ever sit down and explain to you something about contracts? Did your mom and dad ever sit you down and explain anything to you? I have many students in here. They look at me with wild-eyed fascination when I explain to them how my dad sat me down and taught me how to drink. Or my dad sat me down and he explained to me about sex and reproduction. Or my dad sat me down and explained to me about money and gold and silver and paper money, fiat currency. My dad did those kinds of things. He was kind of a peculiar old duck, I guess, in today's modern society, because today parents don't know those things themselves, and they oftentimes have degrees after their names. It's very common to have a student come through law school, and he may be a professor. I've had college professors come through here and say, you know, I've been through the educational process. Now, when you become a college professor, you know, you become a teacher. You don't have to be a professor. You could be a PhD, you know, without being a college professor. But you know, by the time you get to the stage in life where you have a PhD or a master's degree, you have been through the entire educational process. You're out here past grade 24 now, see? You've been to 12 grades of school. Now you've been to college, and then you went to graduate school. Now you've been to advanced graduate school. And oftentimes, they will say to me, I have never heard that before. So I don't teach that in graduate school either. So if you don't know very much about contracts, you shouldn't be surprised. You're not supposed to know. You're not supposed to know. If you're an attorney, you're not supposed to know much more about contracts than what was revealed to you in law school. And do you remember this ad I just gave you here a few minutes ago? Listen to this. This is James Nielsen, a professor at the Hastings Law School, when he said, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, without ever having written a contract. Boys and girls, lawyers can graduate from college without ever having written a contract. And yet contracts are so all pervasive. Listen to the list. And this is just a partial list of the areas of your life in which contracts regulate, govern, control, and determine what you do today. Example, we have a thing called adhesion contracts. For most of you, the word adhesion is a foreign word, might even be a dirty four-letter word. I'll explain more about adhesion contracts, but it's a form of contract that's very common, all pervasive. You've got one. In fact, you probably have five or six adhesion contracts and don't even know it. Credit cards, driver's license, social security, birth certificates, and the Ten Commandments are all contracts. They're all regulated and controlled under the doctrine or law of contracts. Now, a contract, in case you didn't know what it was, let me tell you what one of those critters is, so that as we're talking about contracts, we can understand it a little more clearly. A contract is an agreement. Oh, it's an agreement. Yeah, Sally and Bob agree to get married. That's a contract. It's called a prenuptial agreement. So when Bob and Sally decide to get married, Bob went to Sally and said, Sally, will you marry me? Now that's called an offer. And Sally says, yes, yes, Bob, I will. Okay, now we have an agreement. We have an offer with an acceptance, but we still don't have a contract. We have an offer with an acceptance. We have an agreement. But a contract is something more than an agreement or a meeting of the minds. And so in law, in order to have a contract, a judge has to be able to determine whether or not a contract exists. So when you're dealing in law, we make sure that there is, in fact, a contract. So when you sign the credit card, you can rest assured, when that application for your MasterCard, you may rest assured that some lawyer in the back room somewhere has put in all of the necessary elements into the credit card application so that when you sign it, we have a valid binding contract by which we are going to sue you, and we're going to compel you, and we are going to take away from you certain pieces of your property. We are going to compel you to specific performance under the terms of this agreement, this meeting of the minds. And in some cases, it isn't even a meeting of the minds, because you can have a contract that you have never read, never seen, don't know exists, and couldn't find it at high noon with a roadmap. And you can be bound to it. You can be prosecuted by it, and you can be jailed for violating it. And that's a contract, and that's pretty important. Well, driver's licenses, social security, and birth certificates, the Ten Commandments, are all forms of contracts. Citizenship. If you are a member of a lodge, like the Masonic Lodge, you have a contract with the lodge. Standard contracts have four elements. Now, we covered two of the four elements. That's an offer with an acceptance. Now, we have to have two more elements. There are four elements to a contract. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. So there has to be a time limit or a time element contained in the contract, such as this contract expires in 4 years, or this contract takes effect on June 14th, and it operates for 90 days and expires on. And then there has to be consideration. Typically, the consideration is denominated in dollars. For instance, it's common when you have a quit claim deed to sell a piece of property for $10 and other good and valuable consideration. Notice that to have a binding contract, we have to have consideration. And the $10 is the binding consideration, but it doesn't have to be money. The Ten Commandments, the Old Covenant negotiated by Moses at Mount Sinai, is a contract with no monetary consideration. Although there's a lot of money involved in the terms of the contract itself is predicated upon 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and the reciprocity on the contract is 33 articulable benefits. So God came along, pitched us a deal, and he said, will you do this, that, and another thing? And we said, all that the Eternal has said, we will do, and be obedient. And that's recorded, by the way, in Exodus 24, verse 8. So the acceptance by your great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back. So 84 generations ago, your great-great-granddaddy entered into an adhesion contract with Moses at Mount Sinai, signed up. Even if he couldn't sign his name, he signed up. You can just be born in Germany and become a German citizen. Citizenship is a contract. And you can be bound by all of the laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices of the Constitution of the United States, which is a contract. Having never agreed to the terms and conditions, maybe never having read the terms and conditions, and couldn't find the United States Constitution with both hands at high noon and a roadmap. But it makes it just as binding upon you as if you had written it yourself and signed it with your own blood. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, there are other forms of contracts, such as the Communist Manifesto is a contract. After all, if the Ten Commandments can be a contract, why can't the Communist Manifesto, which has now taken its place, be a contract? Law is a contract derived from citizenship. The telephone, the power, the mortgage, and the insurance are all contracts. Licenses are contracts, although the dictionary definition of a license specifically says that a license is not a contract. But then that isn't to say that the authors of law dictionaries don't lie a little bit once in a while. And there's an important reason why we tell you that a license is not a contract. And that's because a license is a very special form of contract, and we don't want you to know that. So we put you through law school, give you a legal dictionary, and then we tell you a contract isn't a license, and a license isn't a contract. Now, right away, somebody out there, especially if you're a lawyer or you've had some legal training, is going to say, this guy's nuts. Well, hang on a second here, partner. Hang on a second. If the definition of a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration, then we would have to have an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration with each one of these indices that I have just described, such as a credit card would have to have an offer. And when somebody, you know, like say MasterCard, I got one the other day, and it was from that good outfit. I'm trying to think of their name there. They're pretty famous too. Traveler's checks. No, what do they call those? Traveler's checks. I'll think of it here in a minute. My Alzheimer's is getting the best of me. But they sent me one the other day. It was an application for a traveler's check. You know, whatever. American Express. That's what it is. The American Express credit card. The American Express company sent me an application. And it said, here, sign here on the bottom. And we got all these neat benefits. And they described all of the neat benefits in this offer. My acceptance is my signature on the bottom of the form. The consideration is the card, which has a value. And my promise, my signature at the bottom, is my promise to give them reciprocity, that is to pay the bill. You know, they've got a paragraph in there, says they got to pay them so many dollars every month. And there's a time frame. This offer is good until January the 15th or something like that. See? And I have to accept it between, you know, this date when I received it and January the 15th. And then this credit card has a time limit on it. It's good for 4 years. Sometimes they're good, you know, until you terminate the agreement. There can be some other termination agreement. Whatever the termination is the time element. All right, so a credit card then has the four elements of a contract. So all we have to do is to take a look at a driver's license and ask the question, well, does it have an offer? Is there an acceptance? Is there a time element? And is there consideration? Well, last time I got a driver's license, which was a long time ago, I received an offer that was an application from the state of Idaho. And then I signed it on the bottom. That was my acceptance. I paid them $5. That was the consideration. And it lasted until my birthday, 4 years in the future. And I had to give them certain information, one thing and another. And, of course, they say, now, this license is not a contract. They tell you that very specifically. But they lie a lot. I was in the courthouse one day in Boise, and they had an advertisement. And the advertisement had to do with drunk driving. And in the ad, it says, with the signature on your driver's license, you agreed that you would not drive drunk. Boys and girls, when you agree to something, we're dealing with contracts. When you signed your driver's license, you agreed that you wouldn't drive drunk. And that's exactly correct. When you take an oath, you know, when you come into court and you raise your right hand and you say, or somebody will say to you, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God? That's an offer. And then you say, I do. That's an acceptance. And what's the time element during the period of your testimony? And what's the consideration? Prosecution for perjury if you don't tell the truth. That's a contract. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Now, that's why I said contracts are all pervasive, and people go down and get marriage licenses. They sign birth certificates and register their children with the state. They sign their name and get a credit card. In fact, boys and girls, every time you sign your name, you are impairing your liberty to some degree. A common law free man should be able to live his life from birth to death and never sign his name a single time. I said a common law free man. Have you ever signed your name? Well, then you're not a common law free man, because you have impaired your liberty to some degree. Now, there's something to be said about illiteracy. There's something to be said about it. Now, I'm not advocating it any more than I'm advocating polygamy. I'm not here as an advocate. As an educator, I'm here to teach. And most people are woefully ignorant. They're ignorant about sex and reproduction. They're ignorant about alcohol and its effects on the human body. Now, they teach us, you know, they propagandize us about alcohol. There is education concerning alcohol. It's just that the education isn't complete. They never tell you the whole story. Young people who go to college and go out and binge drink are uninformed people who do not understand alcohol. And yet these young people who are binge drinkers that you read about in Reader's Digest, these young people, they see themselves as being educated. After all, they all have high school diplomas. They're at least high school graduates. And yet, from my vantage point, I say, you know, when I read a story about some young person in college who was binge drinking and he overdrank and died as a result of his drinking, I say, well, gee, now here's a young person, 22 years old, 20 years old, 19 years old, has a high school diploma, for crying out loud, and doesn't know how to drink, doesn't understand the effects of alcohol on the human body. I would presume, you know, for all of you young people out there, that if you knew and understood alcohol, you would not be a binge drinker. That's just the conclusion that I arrive at based upon common sense, because binge drinking can kill you. It's a risk that you take. Did you understand the risk? I wouldn't tell you don't binge drink, but I would ask, do you understand what could happen, what the potential is? It's kind of like a sign on the highway. And here in the Ozarks, we have a lot of signs, and it says slow to 35 or slow to 45 or slow to 25. And then they'll have an arrow on there, and this arrow has a 90-degree turn. It says slow to 25. Now, we all know that that sign's a lie. If it says slow to 25, we all know you can do it at 35. But I think they wrote those, you know, for Model A and Model T Fords. And, you know, Model T Ford, you know, is kind of high and doesn't have a very low center of gravity. And 25 is probably about the maximum speed for a Model T Ford going around Grand Union Corner. But then, you know, maybe if you're driving a new Maserati or a Bentley or something, you know, maybe 45 or 50 would be a more appropriate speed. I'm not here to argue with them. I'm just here to tell you that we have guidelines from time to time in life. And people, you know, see those guidelines and then ignore them. And then they suffer a consequence or a penalty. And then they curse God. They get real upset and excited. And they get letters here, and it says, why did God let Roy die? You know, or something like that. So when we're talking about contracts over here, there are guides, you know, that go along with the actions. And you should know something about it before you sign it. But people get marriage licenses, but they never read the terms and conditions of the marriage license, which is contained in your state statutes. All of you listening to me right now, if you're married, you have a marriage license. That license is governed by hundreds of statutes written by your state legislature. How many of you ever read the terms and conditions of the contract before you signed it? And yet, you have all been told. I don't know of anybody that hasn't been told, never sign a contract until your lawyer has read it, which is pretty indicative of itself, you know, of an in and by itself, because it says, well, we're all incompetent. We can't read our contracts. We have to have a guardian called a lawyer that we pay money to, who is going to advise us and tell us whether or not we ought to sign that contract. The guardian ward relationship appears in our lives quite often. The highway patrolman on the highway is a guardian. And he's a guardian of you. He's out there to protect you because you're not smart enough to buckle your seatbelt, and you have a contract with the state, and you agreed that you would buckle your seatbelt when you signed your driver's license. Furthermore, you agreed with the state that you wouldn't even allow anybody to get into your car if you're the driver of that automobile without him buckling his seatbelt. I've had people tell me, buckle your seatbelt. That's the driver. So he looks over at me and says, buckle your seatbelt. Orders me, buckle your seatbelt. That's because he's the captain of the vessel. And the passengers have to obey the captain. Most people don't understand that when you're a driver, you become a captain of a vessel. Now, the telephone bill, the power bill, the mortgage, and the insurance are all contracts, and you probably understand those. Those are probably four contracts that you do understand, because there are written words in these applications, and there's money to be paid every month, and if you don't pay it, they take the telephone out, or shut off your power, foreclose on your home, or cancel your insurance, or your insurance is no good, it lapsed, and it won't pay for your little kid's broken arm. So you can grasp the significance of that. But you know, all of you people down on the Gulf Coast, you know, all of you people who had hurricane insurance believed that when a hurricane occurred, you would be paid by the insurance company for your damages, less the deductible, of course. Then, when the hurricane came and knocked your house down, caused you a great damage, the insurance company says, we don't pay for floods. So if the tidal surge destroyed your house, the tidal surge caused by the hurricane, you thought the hurricane destroyed my house. No, no. If you'd look up the definition of a hurricane, that's a strong wind. And the tidal surge is a flood. And furthermore, if there was any doubt in your mind, paragraph 18 of the insurance contract explained it fully. We don't pay for flood damage. Now, what you were listening to was the salesman who came to your house. You know, the guy that was wearing the $200 suit with wingtip shoes, driving that fancy sports car, who came tooling up in front of your house, and you said, wow, what a successful young man. He came in and he told you all the benefits that you were going to receive for that low, low premium that you were going to pay. And so then when the actual day the hurricane arrived and caused you this damage, you thought you were in safe hands with Allstate, only to find out that Allstate has a clause in the contract that doesn't pay for water or flood or surge damage. So maybe you sued and went to court. Now, if you were going to sue, you might be successful by alleging that you were defrauded by the insurance company. I know I did that one time. I signed a contract with Westlaw. Well, I won't do that again. That Westlaw, you know, those are the authors of law books. I mean, you know, we know lawyers are smart, and then we know that law professors are smarter, and then there's the law publisher. He's smarter than the law professor. And I signed a contract with the smartest of the smart smarts, with Westlaw and Company. And I thought I knew something about contracts. Boy, did I learn something about contracts when I got a bill from Westlaw for double what I'd signed up for. Yeah, that's right. I signed a contract and I said, I'll pay you $9,000. And I got a bill the next year for $18,000 after I'd been making my payments. My bill doubled. How do you like that for a contract? And I teach law and I know about contracts. And I looked at that and I said, I can't believe that I'm that dumb. Listen, the Westlaw people, they have lawyers in law firms signing contracts, and they screw blue and tattoo the lawyers that have been to law school, for crying out loud, boys and girls. So if you've been screwed blue and tattooed by a contract, join the club, because those of us that are in the legal profession get screwed blue and tattooed. There was a story that was on, I think it was PBS Frontline, if I remember right, about credit cards. And they had a law school professor from Harvard, a woman. And she was the other side. She said, these credit cards are taking advantage of Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife because they don't understand the terms and conditions of the contract. And so they went to the American Bankers Association, the ABA, and they had a spokesman. They didn't have a banker on there. They had a spokesman for the ABA, and he was a lawyer. And so the interviewer of the program, he asked the ABA lawyer, he said, do you understand the wording of the contract, the credit card contract? And the guy paused for about 15 seconds. He didn't answer. It was a long, pregnant pause. And he said, well, yes, I do. But then I'm a lawyer. That was his answer. Now, you know, I've read a lot of those contracts, those credit card contracts. And let me tell you, I have to put on my 10-power loop. And I have to sit down with a yellow pad. And I have to write down certain words in the contract. And then I have to look them up in the legal dictionary. And then I have to translate those words. And then I have to write out the paragraph with the translation in it so that I can understand. And boys and girls, I teach this. And that's what I have to do. Now, of course, I don't doubt that there's a lot of real smart lawyers out there that can just read the contract and they already know what the meaning of the word is because they're smarter than I am. But I never claimed that I was the smartest guy in the world. I just said that it's a contract. Credit cards are predicated upon contract. And there's lots of contracts out there, lots of forms of contract, lots of different ways to lie to you, steal from you, and cheat you. And that's what we're talking about this week, contracts. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgialawhour.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about contracts. Now, a good colleague of mine, I'd like to call him a good buddy. I don't think we're quite that close to call him a good buddy, but he's an attorney by the name of Larry Beecraft. And he has a website, and Larry is one of the most knowledgeable lawyers that I know. Now, I know quite a few lawyers, and some of them, you know, aren't too knowledgeable. This one happens to be very knowledgeable. He's very knowledgeable about income tax. Now, I've known this man for probably 20 years or more, and I respect his opinions, and we've had a lot of spirited conversations. And one time he took me to task, and he said that a license is not a contract. And I said to him, I said, well, I'm familiar with Bouvier and Black, and I'm familiar with the definition of a contract. But I said, the contract is predicated upon four indicia. And the contract, if it has these four indicia, is a contract, whether you call it a license, or you call it the Ten Commandments, or you call it the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And so I included in that Social Security. And so he chastised me, and he said, Social Security is a law, it's not a contract. I said, okay. So let me tell you where I'm coming from, and I'm not going to argue with you. You know, you've been to law school. Most of you people out there, you know, you've got college degrees, and you can read the dictionary. But by golly, when I see a black and white critter that smells real bad, I call him a skunk. Out in California, they call them civet cats. And if you say, oh my God, that's a skunk, they'll correct you out there in California. Say, it is not. That is not a skunk. That's a civet cat. Well, okay, and then they'll explain to you. See, they get real technical, and they explain to you the difference between a skunk and a civet cat. Okay, there's different varieties of skunks, I guess. And they'll correct you, and they'll say, no, there's different varieties of civet cats. Okay. You know, you get to talking with somebody, and pretty soon it degenerates into an argument, and I'm not sitting and argue with you. No, that's what you believe, and get after it. But for practical purposes, when you get down here on the bottom line, and this little critter over here, he sprays you real good, you're going to stink real bad, and then they have just about the same smell. And out here in the Ozarks, we call them skunks. And then you can call it whatever you want. Hell, you can call it a coon or a possum, or you could call it something else, you know, and it's fine by me. But bottom line over here is Social Security is a contract because it's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Even though with specificity, the law says, oh, no, that's not a contract. A driver's license is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration, and I think that's a contract. Now, different contracts have different aims and goals. For instance, if you take the term trust, a trust, T-R-U-S-T, a trust is a contract, but it's not called a contract, it's called an indenture. It's called an indenture. I don't know why we call it an indenture instead of a contract, but, you know, I don't write these laws. I don't make these definitions. I'll make these terms. And so I have to live by them, so when I come into court, I'm very careful not to say to the judge, this license is a contract. But when I'm in here defending this, in my mind, I know exactly what I'm dealing with. I know what this little black and white critter is, stinks real bad. So. And so when the judge, you know, is asking me what this is, oh, that's a civet cat. Oh, yes, Your Honor, I know what that is. That's a civet cat. So, but I'm kind of like old Galileo, you know. The Pope told him, you know, he said, Now, you go out there and you tell all these people that the sun revolves around the earth, because if you don't, you're going to hurt real bad. So Galileo did that. He walked outside and he said, okay, I was wrong. I'm a heretic and I'm just sorry as hell. The earth does not revolve around the sun. The sun revolves around the earth. And I was in error and the Pope's right and I'm wrong. And then he walked off the stage and he said, well, that's what I had to confess to, because the Pope was going to kill me. But he said to himself, the earth revolves around the sun nevertheless. Now, I'm sure for all you Catholics out there that you all know that the sun revolves around the earth by popery edict. I mean, that came from the Pope, and Galileo was wrong. And every Catholic in the world knows that. Now, for all the rest of us Protestants and dummies out here, we believe erroneously, do we not, that the earth revolves around the sun. Now, there's a lot of times, boys and girls, in history. Always remember, history is written by the victors. And the victors don't always tell the truth. And for reasons that aren't always obvious, dictionaries written by men who are liars. Now, how do I know they're liars? Let me tell you. In the scripture, it tells us that let God be true, though every man be found a liar. So every man that ever drew breath, including Webster and Bouvier, are liars. And the only guy that tells the truth 100% of the time is our Creator, commonly referred to as God. Now, once in a while I'm asked this question, when I go into court to testify, somebody will say to me, Mr. Gordon, raise your right hand, and do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And I always answer them in a clear, firm voice, no, I do not. And boy, that just causes great ripples through the courtroom. Try it. just go test it. You know, next time you're in court and you're testifying, and that sweet young thing comes up, you know, she's usually a court reporter, and she says, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And you answer in a clear, firm voice, no, I do not. And then test the waters and see how that flies. I went to jail a couple of three times over that to test that. But it's the truth. See, I don't swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth because I'm a pathological liar. I'm one of those men. There are 6.5 billion of us here on the planet, and we're all liars. And so once in a while, some guy comes into the courtroom, tells the truth, and do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And you tell them the truth. No, I do not. And they want to throw you in jail for contempt, for crying out loud, for telling the truth, which is what the guy asked you plainly. I had a judge do that one time, Tim, and he said to me, now, Mr. Gordon, I'm gonna hold you in contempt if you don't agree to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God and take this oath and be sworn in. And I said, did you want me to lie? He said, no. I said, okay, well, then the answer is no, I don't swear. And he found me in contempt and threw me in jail. He threw me in jail for telling the truth, for crying out loud. Now, normal people come in, and they raise their hands, and they swear to tell, that's a contract. Did you know that? That oath is a contract. It's an offer. That offer says, if you don't take this oath, we're going to throw you in jail. There's a penalty involved here. Now, the truth of the matter is, you don't need to take that oath. That's been adjudicated, you know, it's settled law. But you know, many judges don't know that. No, not every judge knows that you don't have to take an oath. Sometimes you have to educate them a little bit. Not every lawyer knows everything. I remember an old guy, his name is Kent Hovind, and he was talking about evolution with some young fellow. I always liked this line, Kent Hovind. He's in jail now, God bless him, he's in jail on tax charges. You know he's all right. When your government throws you in jail on income tax charges, you're all right. You're all right. I always admire people who go to jail on income tax charges. The guy's all right. Well, anyway, Kent Hovind, he's having a conversation with this guy. And this guy says to Hovind, he said that he was stupid and that he was foolish and he was nonsensical because he believed that creation was the basic formula for what we see around us over here, that the creation model was a better explanation for creation than evolution. And you know, you evolutionists out there, you know, when some creationist comes over and says, well, I believe in the biblical account of creation, you know, you look at him with disdain. You say, well, you poor ignorant fool, you boob, you stupid nitwit, you nincompoop. No, that's the first thought that comes through our minds, you know, when we're evolutionists. It used to be my first thought. So Hovind asked him, he said, well, do you know everything that there is to know? And this guy thought for a minute. He said, well, no, I don't know everything that there is to know. And so Hovind said, well, do you know half of everything that there is to know? And the guy thought for a second. He thought, well, no, I don't know half of everything that there is to know. And Hovind asked him the closing question. He said, well, could it be that what I have just told you is a part of that half that you don't know? Now, mull that one over for a minute, boys and girls. Sometimes that's a little hard to grasp, especially if you've been to college. When I told the judge, listen to this question. Listen to the question. It says, do you swear to tell the truth? Wouldn't we have to know what the truth was before we could tell it to the court? So let me ask you the question that Pontius Pilate asked Jesus when he said, what is truth? Do you know? Well, I do, and it's because somebody told me. I wasn't born with this, but somebody told me. I looked it up in the Bible, and it says, thy word is truth. So if you wanted to know what the truth is, it's the scripture. Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So if we could determine what words proceeded out of the mouth of God and distinguish those from the words that some translators have claimed came out of the mouth of God, which might be something different, mightn't it? Then we would know what the truth is. Now, go into the courtroom setting, and the judge asks, or the clerk asks, do you swear to tell the truth? And boys and girls, you'd have to know what the truth was in order to tell it. Now, little Georgie Gordon over here is a real smart dude, but I do not know all of the truth. I know a little bit. I do have a little bit of truth. Not very much, but I got a little bit. So, Now, if you'll listen to this oath, it goes on a step further. It says, not only do you swear to tell the truth, it says, do you swear to tell the whole truth? Whole truth would mean that you'd have to know all of it. Boys and girls, let me be the first guy up that says, I don't know all of the truth. I don't know everything that there is to know. So I do not know all of the truth. I know some. I got a little bit, but I don't have all of it. And that girl, when she asks that question, she says, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth? And then it's summed up when she says, and nothing but the truth. Well, now, I don't know much truth, but I do know this much truth. Now, let me tell you this much truth. Thy word is truth. Let God be true, though every man be found a liar. And I know those two facts. If I know those two facts, then I know that I don't know all of the truth, and I cannot tell nothing but the truth, because I don't know all of the truth. Now, can you follow that? And I know it's kind of heavy duty here, but if you can follow that far, then the only correct answer to that question, do you remember the question? The question is, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Got that? That's the question. And the question is answered yes or no. Yes or no. One of the first things we need to teach a student when he comes here to law school is how to answer questions. And the way you answer a question is yes, no, or I don't know. Yes, no, I don't know. Yes, no, I don't know. Yes, no. Have you got that? The way you answer a question is yes or no, or I don't know. Three ways to answer a question. Okay, so when we ask you the question, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God? Now, what's the answer to that? Well, boys and girls, if you know the truth, if you know the whole truth, and if you're going to testify to nothing but the truth, you could answer that question yes. If you knew those three things, you could answer yes. Well, I don't know those three things. And I don't know all of those three things. And so the only logical conclusion for me, this is just speaking for me, just little Georgie here, I have to always answer no, because that's the truth. And I don't tell the truth very often, no, because I'm a liar. And I always ask students when they come to class, I say, are you a liar? And they'll look at me like I'm suffering from the terminal stupids, you know. Well, of course I'm not a liar. Well, not very many people tell the truth that they are liars. So we start off by asking, well, have you ever told a lie in your life? Just once. So far, in all the years I've been teaching law now for about 23 years, so far I've never had a single student in my class yet say to me, I have never told a lie in my entire life. So far, I've never experienced it, although I did run across one prophet. I was in class one day, I said, have we got any prophets in here? One guy raised his hand, I'm a prophet. I still ask that question once in a while, but it's the only guy I've ever had. It's the only prophet I've ever had in here. A lot of people hear voices. A lot of people hear God talking to them. So far, I haven't, but some people do. So, again, you ask the second question. It says, do you think that before you die, sometime out in the future, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, you might tell one more lie to go along with that one lie that you told many, many years ago and haven't told since? And so far, I've never had a student say to me yet, I will never tell a lie as long as I live. I haven't had that happen yet. So now we've established that you're a liar past tense and that you intend to be a liar future tense. Now we need to do is cover the present. Have you told any lies, mistruths, or half-truths in the recent past, you know, say 5, 10, 15 days ago? So far, in 23 years, I have yet to find one student to come into this class and say, no, I haven't lied recently. So then I come to the final conclusion. I say, well, you're an admitted liar in the past. You're an admitted liar for the future, and you admit that you have lied recently. So you are a liar past, present, and future. Not a bad liar, not a big bad liar like George Gordon, but, you know, just a little liar. Just little lies in the past and little lies in the future, but you're still a liar. Okay? Now, can you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God? And my conclusion would be no, although many people still get up in the courtrooms, raise their hands. Every time I go in there, I always marvel at all the people that raise, especially policemen. Policemen, they get up there and they swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Hell, I've been in the legal profession now for 23 years. I've been in and out of court more than 60 times. I've done 60 cases. And I've only run across one policeman that ever told the truth on the witness stand. One. One. I'll tell you who he was. John DeLeonard was his name, from the Ada County Sheriff's Office. Well, John DeLeonard got up there on the witness stand. I asked him some questions and he told the truth. And really knocked the wind right out of my sails, too. I'll tell you that, boy, there's nothing worse than having a cop get on the witness stand and tells the truth. Because, you see, expecting the guy to lie, because you know that they're all liars. All liars. Now, not all policemen are liars. I got to take that back. Not all policemen are liars. I found one that didn't lie. His name was John DeLeonard. But other than John, all the rest of them, my experience, now, you know, I'm not saying all you policemen out there are liars. I'm just saying, when you guys get on the witness stand, you've already been well coached by the prosecuting attorney, and you all know your story, and you've got your police report, and that's what you're going to testify to, and that's what you're going to stick with. no matter what the questions on cross are. Now, isn't that true, officer? All right, so what I'm pointing out here is that contracts take many, many different forms. And oftentimes, our leaders in the legal profession tell us that these aren't contracts. Kind of like they deceive us into telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and swearing to God that we're going to do that, even though, you know, if we analyze a little bit, we all know that that isn't quite the way it is, don't we? We don't like to think of ourselves as being liars, but the truth is, we all are. And maybe we don't like to think of our driver's license as a contract, but it is. And maybe we don't want to admit that Social Security is a contract, but it is. Larry, it is. It is true that it's not a contract like a credit card contract. It's not a contract like the contract with the telephone company, the power company, the mortgage on your house, or an insurance policy. I'll agree with you there. It's not the same. They're different. An adhesion contract is something different than a credit card contract. I've got to be the first to tell you that's the way I see that. So now that you see where I'm coming from and why I'm coming from that direction, I'm going to tell you some wild stories about these contracts as we progress through here and how you've been misled. Well, I'm assuming that you were misled because I was misled by the largest legal publishing company in the world. The largest legal publishing company in the world lied to me. They lied to me in their literature, and their salesman lied to me when he came into my home. I signed the contract. I was lied to. I was deceived. And when I found out about the fraud, I went into court, and I said, let me expose you. I probably can't win. I probably can't beat you. And you probably have never been beaten before in a legal confrontation over one of your contracts. But by God, I'm going to take you in front of our local judge here, and I'm going to expose you lying frauds for what you are. And I did. And won the case, and I didn't pay him. Well, I didn't pay him what I didn't owe him. I paid him what I did owe him, but I didn't pay him what I didn't owe him. So in case you don't think you can beat City Hall, I could beat West Publishing, and I think you can probably beat City Hall too. Hey, I'm running a little low on time here. We're going to have to break it off right there. Remember, we're talking about contracts. We'll be back here tomorrow night talking about contracts again. But let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.